This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Almost feel like it's sacrilegious as a sports fan to talk over this song when it's playing. It's one of my all-time favorites, and I know it's older, but every time I hear it, I start tapping on the desk or bebopping around. I mean, it's a good thing there's no camera in here. When I posted my picture on Twitter, and there was a reason for it, you go check it out, but I posted my picture on Twitter on Wednesday morning, the inevitable response, and it wasn't from everyone. Most of you were just normal in your responses. I always get one that says you should be on TV, as if only radio, or is only radio people, you the face for radio. If you're too good looking or you're attractive, well, then you shouldn't be on radio. It's a waste. Like, no, I would rather be known for what I know and my ability to entertain. And if not for social media, no one would know what I look like. And that would be totally fine with me. No, it's radio is my love. It's my first love. I'm a radio junkie. And so I will never do TV full time unless it happens to be a basketball gig, in which case you're not on TV full time. But there's a bazillion reasons why TV is not the right format for me. And I'm sure he was being kind. It was his way of giving me a compliment, but it's such a backhanded compliment. I'm not leaving radio. I love radio. We're live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need cash out of your home and a simple way to get it, Rocket can. Radio fits me because I can talk with my hands like a crazy Italian, and because I can make faces, and I have time. I like to take time and really flesh out a topic or have fun with a guest. And I know that's going to be the case with our next guest as she joins us. I don't like to be limited. TV's a very... it's a very rigid formula where you don't have a lot of time to break out. You don't have a lot of freedom to go off the beaten path. I'm a storyteller. You don't have a lot of time to tell stories on TV either, because there's always a post you have to hit, a clock that is your master. So instead, we do radio and we just have a grand old time making our way through 4 hours every single night. So you can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio, on our Facebook page too. I swear we're going to put up a photo here this hour just because I don't want to completely ignore you all Facebookers. Our phone number is 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. As we talked about most of last hour, here's the scenario, yo. The Braves and the Astros are within one win of clashing in the World Series. Do you think the Braves will be sentimental favorites? That's kind of an interesting question, because I don't know how many people have dropped their grudge against the Astros, even if it didn't affect their team personally. But that's a question for another day when the actual World Series matchup is set. For now, let's talk about what we've got with the Final Four. Jessica Kleinschmidt joining us from the Bay Area. She's a longtime baseball reporter and insider, and this is going to be fun because she knows how to tell a story and because we get along great. So the Atlanta Braves have fought back, and we saw these brilliant pitching moves by Brian Snitker and Drew Smyly especially delivering. And now here we are, second year in a row, the Dodgers are in a 3-1 hole to Atlanta. So with the NLCS from these wild swings, going back to the Bellinger home run, Cody Bellinger home run late in game three, what did you see to the point where we are now with the Braves one win away, Jess?
The Braves are just blowing me away, and in the best way possible. I really like what their approach is just at the plate. They're relentless, which is great. You see Adam Duvall, a guy that I don't want to take anything away from him, but you know, a veteran guy who you're maybe not anticipating a lot from, just coming through clutch. I think that's awesome. Of course, Rosario, who I slept on throughout the season. I knew he had a lot coming. And of course, you know, he almost hit for the cycle on Wednesday night. That didn't quite obviously pan out, because instead he hit two home runs. Like, why not? I made the joke of maybe a cycle adjacent type of a move, and I really appreciated that a lot. So I feel bad that I slept on the Braves the entire season. And I think that has a lot to do with the fact that we're not really allowed to sleep on the Dodgers. And you did mention Bellinger, and I really like seeing a guy like that who, I think he was hitting like 185 through the season. He wasn't really doing well, but coming through clutch in important moments was great. And, you know, Chris Taylor is always really strong in October, and he was able obviously to have a strong regular season. So it's definitely very much a back and forth situation. I loved seeing, you know, Max Scherzer come out of the bullpen, which, you know, the guy would pitch every single day, every single inning if it were up to him. We know that acquisition at the trade deadline was fabulous. Same with Trey Turner. I would love to see a Trey Turner on every single baseball team, and I think that would just add so much more pizzazz to the league. So it's been really cool to watch. And then of course the Braves with Charlie Morton, who is just, I can watch him play or watch him pitch every day. And it's almost like this choreography, not to mention he's a veteran guy. And it feels like he's just getting better as time goes on, and having the Rays background behind him and everything like that. He's just been strong. And Max Fried as well. We're definitely not giving the Braves starting rotation as much attention as we should, because we were expecting the Dodgers to kind of blow through. I mentioned Scherzer, and then Urias was not coming up clutch like we were used to, and they had the opener situation, which certainly helped them. I'm very impressed by the series. We know obviously the Dodgers are a little bit behind, but I don't foresee them laying down in this next upcoming game, and I feel like it's still going to be a battle. But I've been very, very impressed. I was a little annoyed that it was a blowout tonight, but I understand that those things are going to happen. That's why they are a 7-game series.
You know, what's crazy is that the Dodgers were the best home team in the majors all year. And before tonight, they had won 18 of their last 19 at Dodger Stadium. But I think that the pitching disparity is really showing up. As you mentioned, Julio did not pitch well, and really hasn't pitched as well the last couple starts. Max Scherzer has been their consistent guy, but we saw Walker Buehler all year, but it's not been that way in the past month. He's shown some cracks in the armor as well, and so it's Tony Gonsolin, and it's whoever they can grab out of the bullpen, and it's finally starting to catch up with them.
You mentioned Buehler, and heading into his outing, I feel like I had the utmost confidence in him. I was worried about the Braves. And you know, baseball is just one of those finicky sports where you can't just get, you know, when you fill up the bracket for the World Series, mine's totally busted from the first game. And that just goes to show how weird it actually is. And so with Buehler's heading into the game, you know, it was really cool to see that Vandy versus Vandy matchup against him versus, you know, Dansby Swanson, their former teammates. And I realized I put a lot of I put a lot of pressure on you, Walker, but I think we all did. We were, like you said, like during the regular season, he was solid and it wasn't quite what we anticipated, but that's the beauty and like the hardships of the postseason. Cody Bellinger coming up clutch and guys just have this pop during the postseason. We didn't get to see Arcia a lot kind of do that pop thing, but that guy has a really strong history of being strong in the postseason with when he was with the Brewers, just insane during the postseason. So it kind of goes to show, and that's what ultimately sealed the deal. And I feel like that's how it usually is in those postseason games. You have to obviously have the strong pitching, the healthy pitching, but some of those plays are going to come down to obviously the defensive stuff and then the clutch hits. But I think it really bit him in the butt without having Julio. And then that opener scenario certainly worked out, but I don't think they were anticipating that throughout the entirety of the series. I thought Gavin Lux was going to step up a little bit more. He was hot, but not quite as hot as he would have liked. So kind of a weird bunch of scenarios caught up to him, as you said.
Mm. Jessica Kleinschmidt is with us from the Bay Area. She's a longtime baseball reporter and insider, and we're talking championship series and what's happening in this crazy October. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. Well, let's talk about the NLDS just a little bit through the eyes of the Giants, because you spend a good majority of your time in the Bay Area following A's and Giants. When you think back to that series now with the dust settling, it was obviously extremely close. The Giants had thrown two shutouts in that series before they got to game number five, and game number five didn't have a ton of offense. What was the difference between these two powerhouses in the NL West?
Unfortunately, all I'm going to think about, and I think everybody's going to think about, is that really crappy strike three call against Wilmer Flores, and that's not fair to the entirety of the series. It's always going to be a rivalry between these two teams, but I think it was heightened during this. The Giants just had a magical season, and I went into the season thinking the Giants were going to be this team that would piss off the other teams. They weren't going to be the number one team in the NL West. I'm literally on the record saying that. Joke is on me, but that had a lot to do with the health of their pitching and, you know, Brandon Crawford having this clutch resurgence here and everything like that. And he showed that in the postseason. And you need those veterans like him and Buster Posey, and then Brandon Belt if he didn't get bit by that injury bug. And then even Evan Longoria coming back from injury. I think that kind of flooded over into the postseason and being led by Gabe Kapler, who did such a beautiful job with his managerial duties. I think that was why they did so well. I'm not going to put everything on that strike three call. And of course, people are going to determine. We don't know what Max Scherzer and versus Wilmer Flores would have ultimately happened should that strike been, you know, taken back or whatever.
Right.
But it was a beautiful, awesome, good baseball series that you wanted, you know, Vin Scully to be there to kind of take it all in. That's the stuff that you kind of play, like an actual fan plays for. It's the series that you say, inject this into my veins. That's what you want to see. And I think that's what it ultimately came down to. And I really enjoyed the way that they handled the pitching, and the bullpen was strong. The Giants got Jake McGee where they certainly needed it. Shout out Reno native. And then they were just strong across the board. And I thought it was wonderful that way. But at the end of the day, it usually just comes down to that one game and a few, you know, snafus. And you mentioned like the strongness of that Giants starting pitching, but it goes to show when it comes to the end of the series, it's tough. And so I was very impressed with what the Giants did, but it just ended on such a buzzkill of a call. And I know they're going to be talking about that for a very long time.
So you talk about Gabe Kapler, and I think he was a revelation for me, taking over for Bruce Bochy, and the fact that he had not had great success in Philadelphia, but it seems like the perfect formula in San Francisco, whatever that formula happens to be. But what else gave the Giants the staying power that surprised people, including you, this season?
That's a great question. I was shocked. I knew Buster Posey was going to return. He, of course, opted out of the 2020 season for the most beautiful reason, to take care of his baby twins.
Yes.
But I also, I feel like I'm saying it over and over again, but Brandon Crawford really blew me away. And, you know, Buster Posey also did. And but Brandon Crawford to go from, you know, he's always been defensively one of the most impressive shortstops I've ever seen, but he was obviously able to create this marriage with it, with his presence at the plate, and, you know, show these mid infielders, these young guys that Farhan Zaidi, president of baseball operations, said pay attention to and everything like that. And, you know, Farhan also gave Crawford a 2-year extension, and that goes to show and just how great he is. And, you know, he's an NL MVP talk. So I think he was certainly a huge reason why the team did so well. I mentioned health. The pitching was certainly strong. It was a lot of these guys that you weren't anticipating. You know, De Sclafani, like, where did he come out of? Like, that was phenomenal to watch what he was doing. And even knowing how strong that pitching, the pitching coaching staff is, because before they shipped off, like, the Will Smiths the season before, they add velocity onto these guys, and they have these secondary pitches. You have Tyler Rogers coming out of the bullpen, who's just a submariner and just throws everybody off. And so I think the community of that, and I mentioned the health, and that's so imperative. And I feel like it's silly to say, but we all know how important that is. You look across the league, if certain teams stayed healthy, they'd be in the neck of the race as well. So I think overall that it was like the perfect idea. And you have to look at the farm system too. And, you know, during the trade deadline, when they acquired Chris Bryant, who I haven't even mentioned yet, gosh forbid, but they didn't even have to get rid of some of their top prospects. Joey Bart, their top catching prospect, still on the team. And I think that goes to show that the Giants are still going to be in it for the next long time. So that's cool to think about as well. So all those things combined, they 100% deserve to be there.
When the Giants, and maybe to an extent the A's, are playing well, how fired up do fans in the Bay Area get? Because it kind of seems to me like baseball still drives the bus. Giants baseball still drives the bus there.
In the Bay Area, it's still the same. Yeah, the Giants definitely drive it. And, you know, I will say the thing I love about the A's, and like I'm just going to nip it in the bud right now, like they don't get a lot of fans. But I will say having 10,000 fans at an A's game sounds like 30, 40,000. And I'm not just saying that lightly because they're just so passionate and loud. But this season was really interesting. I mean, the Giants were, it took a time. I think that's normal. It's always the early part of the season until it's not. And even I, you know, sucked it up. I was like, all right, this Giants team is legit. The A's were a huge roller coaster, and I truly believe they had the biggest trade deadline acquisition. They got Starling Marte, who just led the league in steals and had a resurgent season of his own and all of that. And then, you know, getting Josh Harrison with Yan Gomes and then Andrew Chafin to the bullpen. That was a good little spark in them, but they were really riddled with injury. And then, of course, Ramon Laureano getting suspended for 80 games. I think that actually hurt them more than they were willing to talk about. So they just had a roller coaster of a season slash a little bit of a bombing. They're very streaky and that kind of screwed them over. But I think they had a ton of potential and they got nipped in the bud by not just injuries, but other stuff that was just, it was just a tough like schedule certain times, and they could not beat the Mariners, whether you want it. They tried so hard.
I know.
It was just weird, but they did great against the Astros. So it was just kind of interesting from that dynamic. But the Giants really did well, and there was not one team that they really struggled against. I felt like they didn't really face a lot of AL teams, which I would really love for them to see like that, those matchups. So that was interesting. But across the Bay, we were very spoiled as baseball fans, and I really loved that.
Jessica Kleinschmidt is with us from the Bay Area, a longtime reporter and insider for MLB. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. Well, you mentioned the Astros, so let's dovetail there. You got to see a lot of them as part of that AL West. As much as people want to point to the cheating in 2017, only five guys are remaining, and management has changed. What makes them a consistent winner if it's not banging trash cans, Jessica?
I really want to highlight their relentlessness, and I think that that's part of the reason why the A's were doing so well, because they're just as relentless, and I loved watching them go up against each other. But you look at the trade deadline, all they really had to do was beef up their bullpen, and I feel like that's across the league. And the bullpen market was intense, but they did get Kendall Graveman, who was just having a phenomenal season with the Mariners. So I loved that addition. Their starting pitching was super strong, and that was impressive. And then once Alex Bregman got back from his injury, they were stacked. And, you know, having been in the postseason watching the A's go up against the Astros in last year's postseason, Carlos Correa and Jose Altuve know how to handle it. And it's just, they're always solid throughout the regular season, but you get them into October baseball and they're a beast. And last season, of course, they had George Springer. So I was a little nervous about how the Astros are going to be handling that situation without them, but they're obviously doing a really great job. And I've been impressed with what they're doing, and they just have it. And then Yuli Gurriel is 37 years old and he won the AL batting title. I had to keep Googling it on Baseball Reference to be like, is he actually 37? He's just, he really is. And, you know, of course, like we know how 37 in MLB, like you might as well be 80. And that's not because we think it is, but it's just how people are, especially when they're approaching like their fantasy lineups. But I was very impressed with what he's done this season. And their bullpen was strong, as I mentioned, bringing Graveman onto the team and everything like that. So that was overall just very impressive. I love, love, love what Dusty Baker is doing as well. And this is no fault to what AJ Hinch did. I love how he stood up and like took a lot of the blame for all the cheating, but he needed, that was tough shoes to fill as well. I loved what Hinch did, and you're going to bring in a guy like Dusty Baker, who has so many wins and a smart baseball coach, and really just a guy that's strong for their team. And the way that the Astros handled you mentioned the cheating scandal, it's going to be around them forever. And you'd have people talking about it and they're handling it. I love like the back and forth that they're giving and everything like that. That's been interesting. But they're just a good baseball team. And I don't think that anybody can really argue with that. But people are going to argue with me about that. And they just have all the ingredients it takes, and they whip it up and they bake something really special.
I love that you use the word strength and strong about Dusty Baker, because he's been around for so long that there really isn't anything that rattles him. He's a steadying influence. He's calm. Even when he's fired up about baseball, he's a rock for that franchise. And as long as they still have Bregman, Jose Altuve, Carlos Correa, a couple of the others that may not factor in terms of day-to-day roles, but even just being around the team, like a Justin Verlander, this is a group that gives them that defiance, that mental edge and that toughness. And we've seen it over and over. And now against the Red Sox, I'm not sure about you, but I'm stunned with the way the ALCS has swung so wildly from 3 grand slams by the Red Sox in a couple of games, which is a franchise, well, not just a franchise, but a baseball postseason record, to the bats just going silent and the pitching moves for Dusty Baker working out so perfectly.
And I got to give the Red Sox credit too. I mean, and Kike Hernandez, just like, what are you doing, dude? Like, how are you just, he's always been a good ball player, but it just feels like, you know, you step up and there's not a hotter hitter in baseball right now. And it's definitely him. And even if he's taking a few setbacks, it's interesting. But the game tonight was interesting. I mean, Chris Sale was actually looking like the Chris Sale we were used to. Right. And the next thing you know, he's the Chris Sale that we don't want to see. And he had a really tough comeback. You know, obviously he was out of the league for a couple of seasons, and, you know, he was working really hard. So it was great, but he was certainly pumped up at the beginning. We obviously know how that turns out, but that's speaking toward the Astros. You can't sleep on the Astros. And it was looking like the Red Sox could have given them a run for their money. And that was kind of interesting to see. But, you know, Devers as well is having a super strong outing for him. And then Kyle Schwarber has been, you know, coming through clutch, but I really get nervous about him playing at first base. It's just kind of, I know he's not 100% comfortable there. But I think that once he does, he's obviously a very strong player, but it was like a really kind of a gross game to watch. It just looked very first game of spring training jitters with like the second squad coming out. I didn't like it at all. It just wasn't very October baseball-y. But overall, you know, it wasn't a good indication of the team that it actually is. We've seen this team, you know, obviously the first couple of games heading at the beginning of the series, and that's the baseball you want to sign up for. But I'm a very firm believer in this Red Sox team, and I feel like these two teams together, the Red Sox are always strong in the postseason. It doesn't really matter what they do in the regular season. So I think if they just have those clutch bats, and of course the pitching stays healthy and their bullpen's good, they're going to be a really solid team as well. And I think they're going to be solid for the next couple of seasons, but I really like this matchup as well.
There are a lot of different ways the World Series could play out, but the matchups that we've seen so far, definitely two sets of teams that are going toe-to-toe, and it's about, I like to think of it as a tug-of-war, where you've got one team that pulls hard, pulls well, and they gain some momentum, but then the other team yanks them right back. So let's see how these things play out in the next couple of days. Jessica Klein-Schmidt, baseball reporter, insider from the Bay Area, we need you to hang on. Going to take a quick break, and then I've got this scenario I want to run by you about a potential managerial addition in the National League West with the Giants, the Dodgers, and great to have you with us. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Stanek's 2-2. Ground ball hits softly right side. Gurriel shovels to his right. He has it. Wins the foot race to first. And that is the ball game. The Houston Astros are one win away from an American League pennant as they go up 3-2 over the Boston Red Sox, taking game 5 of the ALCS 9-1.
One ball, two strikes, two outs, pitch on the way, hit in the air to deep center, going back Guillermo Heredia, back to the wall, he's there, he has got it and slams into the wall, and the Braves win the ball game 9-2, and they are one win away from the World Series here in 2021.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Two very different series in the ALCS. Robert Ford on the Astros Radio Network and the NLCS with Ben Ingram on Braves Radio delivering those final calls. They could very well converge in the same place, baseball's Fall Classic. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Couple more minutes with Jessica Kleinschmidt. We're going to get off the beaten path here. She's joining us from the Bay Area, longtime baseball reporter and insider. And let me run this by you, Jess. There's one manager out there who really surprises me as a free agent. I never expected this with Mike Schilt, recently set loose, fired from St. Louis because of philosophical differences. There is an opening in the NL West, a division you know well. It's a young team, a ton of talent. They kind of fell off a cliff in the second half of the season. So what do you think about a possible fit between Schilt and the Padres?
I want Mike Schilt to succeed in everything that he does. I was blown away with what he does, not to mention the guy. You know, we're not seeing that many managers who aren't former players. And from what I saw from the Cardinals organization, they just had that phenomenal season winning, you know, 17 in a row. And they weren't like, this is no disrespect toward the Cardinals. I, of course, am used to the flashy A's and the flashy Padres. They weren't this sexy team that was, you know, bat flipping like crazy. Nolan Arenado would get like funky every now and then. But I do like that that addition, and that has to do with both the fact that he knows how to take a team from what the Cardinals were to going on that streak, making the postseason. And that's what the Padres need right now. And the reason why Tingler was fired was because of the expectations, which is fair. They were supposed to, you know, they were in all of my predictions to be second in the NL West, and I don't think anybody could argue with me with that heading into the 2021 season. But I love that idea, and that's, of course, with the winning stuff, and Schilt's just a good dude, and the way he stands up for his team is just phenomenal. And, you know, I'm spoiled. I'm used to the Bruce Bochys and the Bob Melvins of the world, and, you know, the old school guys. I feel like Schilt has the beauty of doing that. It'd be interesting to see how he deals with, like, the younger guys, but I could see him, like, being stoked that Tatis Jr. did a bat flip. I could see him embracing that, but I'm sure he's going to be called very quickly because what he did with that Cardinals organization was phenomenal, and it just sucked about how they went about it. That was right. The most shocking thing ever, and it kind of goes to show, you know, it doesn't matter how good you are. If the ownership sees a certain thing, they're going to do a certain way and everything like that, and even people that have covered the team as long as they have were just as shocked. You could see the insiders, the big names that were shocked as well. I love that idea with AJ Preller there in that front office. They're going to go after somebody, like a big name, and who knows if Bochy wants to come back. And as I heard he does, his friends close to him said that he's itching to get back. It's more or less if his wife wants him to. It's the health thing and everything like that. I can only imagine all of that stuff. It was my World Series prediction. I would love for him to come back. The good thing about that is that there are a lot of amazing candidates who could do a really good job with a really great up-and-coming team.
Well, if you're looking to establish a winning culture, you want to pull from an organization that has a long track record. And Mike Schilt comes from a long stretch in St. Louis where they've been one of the winningest baseball teams over the past 20 years. Find Jessica on Twitter at Kleinschmidt. Wait, do I need to spell it? I'll spell it just because I don't want people guessing. Yes, are you ready?
Okay.
K-L-E-I-N-S-C-H-M-I-D-T. J-D at the end. Although if you start typing, I bet she's going to pop up on Twitter. And Jessica, I'm hoping before we let you go that you'll give us maybe a little tease about what you have that you're working on or have that people might anticipate coming up, because you're kind of starting a new phase in your career.
I am. Yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff on the horizon. I have my hands in a bunch of different things, which is what I love. I love doing a trillion different things. I can't announce too much because, you know, once you have to wait till the stuff is actually signed and crossing the T's and dotting the I's, but I'll still be around. Very much on social media promoting all of my work, but there's some cool stuff on the horizon, and people aren't going to be able to get rid of me. So that's good, both good and bad. And I'm hopefully going to be staying in baseball for a very long time. So that's at least good as well.
Well, you need to follow her on Twitter because Vin Scully does. Can I tell you, never has anyone made me jealous more than that. I want Vin Scully to follow me on Twitter. I will know that I have made it if Vin Scully follows me on Twitter.
I think it's Cluck. I'm very proud of like the following that I have. But when he did it, I literally screamed. You know, I had my group text of all my sports women, and I was like, girls, I think I'm better than you guys right now. They did not argue.
I can't argue either.
Just. It's the one time I brag, it's like Vin Scully follows me on Twitter, and the rest is whatever after that.
How much time do you think Vin spends on Twitter?
So I did hear he's not usually the one that's tweeting from his account, because a couple of messages that we've gotten is like from somebody kind of representing him. But I think he deserves to not be on Twitter because there's a lot of negativity and he does not need any negativity around him. He needs to be in his happiness bubble full of amazing stories and beautiful voice. So that's how I believe.
Okay, like I said, so jealous. He's one of my favorite people in all of sports. So, Jessica, it's great to catch up with you from the Bay Area. We'll do it again. Thanks so much.
Of course. Thanks, Amy.
Oh, I couldn't agree more with Jess. Isn't that a great point? Vin Scully is better than Twitter. And in his retirement and his happy place, his bliss, where every now and then he'll record a video and it posts on Twitter, he does not need to see the cesspool. Because even if you're Vin Scully, no doubt you get negativity. Isn't that sad? There are people that I think are absolutely amazing, near perfect humans, which of course there's no such thing, but pretty darn close, and somehow they still get negativity on social media. I mean, I'm used to it, but Vin Scully should never have to see it. So I love the fact that he probably doesn't spend much time on social media, but yeah, how amazing is that? There are a lot of things in this world that will say you made it, but if Vin Scully ever follows me on Twitter, that will be a dead giveaway that I am someone special. 855-212-4227. That's our toll-free line. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. The picture is up on Facebook. And no, I did not get my access back. I'm using James's Facebook. We're just cheating because they're not sending me their damn code. But people just keep assuming that I'm back. No, but there is a picture for you, just so you know I'm not deserting you totally. So whether it's Facebook or Twitter, A-Law Radio, we're glad to have you after hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
C.D. Lamb has caught 8 balls for 114 and a touchdown.
Okay, we've had a bunch of holding calls, but now you're telling your linemen here, ball's at the 35, do not get extended. Do not get your arms outside of your defender.
Play fake, boot to the right. Looking down the field, Lamb, 10, 5, victory! Cowboys win! The ghosts are exorcised.
Hits, misses, and messes. Time to talk football after hours with Amy Lawrence.
I was stunned that the walk-off from Dak Prescott to CeeDee Lamb did not win the title of TD of the week, but you all voted almost 2-1 for Derrick Henry's 76-yard scamper. And that one, of course, sparked the Titans against the Bills in what was a wild Monday night affair with 7 lead changes, most ever in a Monday game. And ultimately, it was not just the ground game led by Derrick Henry, 143 yards and 3 scores, but it was also the defense and especially the red zone defense by the Titans against the Bills. So that was the capper to week number 6, and now we're looking ahead to week number 7. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. The reason I asked producer James to come back with the CeeDee Lamb walk-off is because I finally had the courage. Dallas is actually on a bye in week 7. But I had the courage to look at my fantasy football matchup from last weekend. I thought, okay, you know what? I got to go in and make changes to my lineup. I'm just going to suck it up and look and see how badly I lost. And if it's 5 points and Adam Thielen was on my bench with 30, well then, okay, I'm not going to feel so bad. Now, this is coming off of a week I'm sure many of you can identify. My team scored 150 points last week in week 5, and I lost to someone who had 162 points. That's insane. I didn't even know a fantasy football team could have 162 points in my league anyway. And so I was all upset. And then somehow I forgot to put Adam Thielen back in my starting lineup. So he'd had a really rough week. He barely got targeted by Kirk Cousins and the Vikings. I took him out of the starting lineup, and then I forgot to put him back in. Anyway, he was on my bench with 30 points. My opponent had not just CeeDee Lamb, but Dalvin Cook. And I won by more than 10 points. But get this, her quarterback, who in the world would ever make Daniel Jones their starting fantasy quarterback? Why? Unless her QB got injured, maybe she had Russell Wilson and Daniel Jones was the best that she could find as a replacement. I don't know, James. What do you think? It's an all-female league, so I know it's a girl or a woman, sorry. But I have no idea why you would take Daniel Jones.
Surprisingly, Daniel Jones's fantasy numbers actually had been pretty decent because he gets those rushing points. And he gets a couple, get one
he
rushing touchdown.
He turns the ball over.
Yeah, he had been okay. Actually, for fantasy-wise, he had been okay. But going into last week, there was no reason to start Daniel Jones because coming off the concussion, coming off of all the injuries the Giants offense was facing against the Rams, there was no reason to start Daniel Jones last week. That was a move that, I mean, if you wanted to do it, I think 2 weeks ago was maybe a time to kind of ride the Daniel Jones train. But after the injury, there's no way I'm starting Daniel Jones against the Rams. That was on her.
Yeah. Well, now the Giants have lost Andrew Thomas, who it seems like is the key for Jones. He gets protection when Thomas is out there. He doesn't get protected when Thomas isn't. So it leaves a very large hole, but Thomas is out. And so now Daniel Jones is he literally on an island again. It felt like this last year too, but the offensive line has been porous. Saquon Barkley's hurt again. Kadarius. Yeah. Go with your first answer, Amy. Kadarius Toney and of course Kenny Golladay have been injured too. It's a mess. And I almost picked Carolina in the Survivor Island pool. I ended up going with Arizona because I felt like there's no need to get cute. The only change I would make would be the Patriots against the Jets. And this is the reason why. I was trying to make my argument to James earlier because how many more weeks would I be comfortable picking the Patriots? This is one of the only matchups in the NFL in which I would be comfortable picking the Pats because while they come close, They're still very inconsistent with their rookie quarterback. And so I thought maybe if I picked them this week and survive that I could save Arizona. But I don't know.
Is that getting cute is what I said to you. I mean, you gotta determine for yourself, is that getting cute or is that not? Because you know the best player of the week is probably Arizona. But the Patriots are a good play.
Or Green Bay. Home against Washington. Right. But I didn't pick the Packers.
No, you didn't. But goes on the point that you know that there are better plays than New England this weekend, probably for survivor purposes. But it's not a bad play, but is it getting cute? I don't know. That's the question.
So here's what I did with my fantasy team going back to that. So I ended up winning because Josh Allen had a huge day, even though the Bills lost. And because Najee Harris had an awesome performance, too, for the Steelers in their win. And I'm trying to think who else performed really well for me that I wasn't expecting. J.D. McKissick, actually. He catches everything thrown to him, and so he's a good play in fantasy, too. But this week, because Nick Chubb is out, he's still on my bench, and because the Steelers are on a bye, I had to go out and pick up Ramondre Stevenson, who I had originally and had dropped, but I had to go out and pick up the rookie from the Patriots, and then I had to decide what to do at quarterback. The options were Carson Wentz or Mac Jones or Sam Darnold, and I didn't feel great about any of them. I almost went with Mac, and then I decided to go with Carson, because even if they lose at San Francisco, he's been putting up good numbers. And Sam Darnold makes me nervous because he'll throw three interceptions as quickly as he'll throw three touchdowns. And the Giants' defense has been okay. I almost went with Mac. And then I thought, okay, he's a rookie quarterback. Do I want to do that? So I think ultimately I went with Carson. I'm not feeling great about that either. I reserve the right to go back and change it.
Yeah, you got time to think about that one.
Anyway, that's fantasy. As for reality, it's Buffalo, Dallas, Minnesota, Pittsburgh, the Chargers, and Jacksonville on bye this week. And so there are a lot of fantasy decisions and discussions that have to happen. But for the Cowboys to go into the bye on a 5-game win streak, it's huge. Not only because they have a chance to take a breath and come off that overtime win over New England, but also because Dak suffered a bit of a calf injury. Here's Jerry Jones at his weekly appearance on our Dallas affiliate 105.7 The Fan.
I think the fact that the bye is there, my feeling is that ought to take care of it in terms of enough time for it to get to where he can really compete normally. So I would be probably a little concerned if we were playing this week, but the fact we've got two, I'm good shape yet.
We'll hear more from Jerry a little bit later on as we look ahead to week 7, but also the teams that are on bye. And we got big news from the Cleveland Browns in that Baker Mayfield is out this week. He's not going to be able to play with what was a dislocated non-throwing shoulder. We know he's a tough guy and that he would have done anything. He actually said the decision was his, which is not accurate. The decision's not solely his because the team knows they can't afford to have him any further injured or take another setback if they want to not lose him for the long term. So this is an opportunity for Case Keenum to get out there and start. And so we'll hear from Case Keenum and Kevin Stefanski coming up a little bit later on. It's still another 24 hours before we're actually talking about the first game of week 7, but I'm already excited about some of these matchups, like Kansas City at Tennessee, considering what the Titans just did against the Bills on their own field, and now Nissan Stadium will be jamming even more, because if the Titans would get back-to-back wins over the Bills and the Chiefs, that's massive, not just for them in the AFC South and for conference play, but also for their confidence. So that one's big. Also, Cincinnati and Baltimore. And Zach Taylor says Joe Burrow's still not talking. I told you, I had to go 2 weeks earlier in my career. It was about 20 years ago when I had some initial damage to my vocal cords. And a doctor said to me, you need to stop talking now or you're going to have permanent damage. If you stop talking now, these polyps will heal up and your cords will heal up. And we'll go through some therapy and we'll get you all fixed up for a long career. But not talking for 2 weeks was really difficult. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week 1? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.